All right, 3, 2, 1, we're live.
Welcome to Toronto Tech Talks with your host, MG.
Welcome back to the show, Rena.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Awesome.
Excited to be
see
here.
You again.
Yeah.
Are you ready for today?
I am.
So this episode is about Lean Coffee Session, where we both write our topics that we would like to discuss. Each topic gets 15 minutes. At the end of 15 minutes, we will vote to either move to the next topic or continue.
Okay, sounds good.
This podcast is about bringing people and ideas together. We believe in embracing change and empowering teams improves both outcomes and outputs. So, what is the vision you're working toward? You can learn more at torontotechtalks.ca.
All right. Are you ready?
Yes. I've got a few topics here.
All right.
Let's see what you got. Okay. So on my end, I've got the importance of coaching at the right level. And so what does that mean in organizations? Did you want me to read all the ones that I have?
Sure.
Okay. Scrum masters into coaches. And so kind of just looking at what that means in terms of the Scrum Master role and how we can leverage that more. And the last one I put on here was coaching teams versus roles. So is there a difference between a team-based approach and kind of coaching as a group collective or deep diving specifically into maybe just the product owner role or the Scrum Master role?
Interesting. I've got three topics on my end. First one, roadmap. What's the importance of a roadmap and how can we build one? Second, product owner versus product manager.
Ooh.
The third one, how can we help adopt an agile mindset, not just to one specific team or department, but for the organization? All right, let's time box our first topic to 15 minutes. Feel free to pick any topic of your choice.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with the importance of coaching at the right level. It's a very appropriate conversation.
15 minutes on the clock. Let's go.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
So what does that mean?
What does that mean? So lately, I've been doing a lot of training in this last year, and I've been hitting a new audience, which has been very interesting. And what I've been having to tailor a lot and work through is figuring out what does that message look like when you're working with leaders that are driving the change and need to support those through the change versus those going through the change. And so that's been very interesting. It's been a lot of, you know, putting on a different hat each time you come to the table. It's been a matter of, I find, making sure you're not getting too tactical because that audience, you will lose them, but making sure that they understand what it is their teams are doing. Because I find a lot of the value, and understanding really comes from seeing what it looks like. And that's where they really start to understand where we're headed.
I want to step back and understand, how did you get into this?
Yeah, so I think I'll play on a little bit of my RBC experience.
Yes.
In the last year. And going into a line of business where, yeah, you know, we pretty much get a phone call and it's, hey, we want to go agile, we need some support. So you kind of go in and you start to do as much as you can. And at some point you realize there's a pattern there.
When you say phone call, was it from an internal department or somebody on a client side?
Yeah, it's usually another department. In my time, I was in the Center of Excellence. And so a department would reach out and you would go in and do some training. It works really well. You know, the team gets bought in.
Yeah.
And then we start to recognize that we may have skipped a step because you start doing it for a few weeks, few months. And then the team starts hitting roadblock after roadblock.
Okay.
And it's almost like, well, we never really told them what to do with the roadblocks. And that should almost be the first conversation.
What were your challenges stepping into a coaching role?
Okay. So first, I would say there are many, many challenges. I find challenges just turn into learnings and you become better and better each time. Maybe a few of them would be, I can pull on an example. This might not be a positive example, but it's worth sharing.
Yeah.
I coached a team and the product owner situation was not dedicated.
Yeah.
And just an overall misunderstanding of the time commitment needed for,
yeah,
the role. Very common, I find right now in financial for sure. So the product owner situation, we kind of just worked around it. Mm-hmm. And that's the, you will fail if, like, that's probably one of the first messages I start with now.
Yeah.
Let's understand what it means to be dedicated, what time commitment that role is,
yeah.
and why, like, if you don't have your product owner at the table, what are you missing?
Okay.
So I think that was as I started through that journey, we just assumed that that was a given, that my product owner is just going to be 50% in a different building. And we made a lot of concessions.
Yeah.
3 months in, you know, the backlog's a mess. Mm-hmm. Nothing is refined.
Yeah.
There's a disconnect between what we're delivering and how are we on track.
Yeah.
The product owner was expecting more. And, you know, you kind of just, if we had to step back and predict the future, I mean, duh.
Yeah,
yes, that was going to happen.
Yes.
So I think that was a big challenge for me. I think looking back, I take a bolder stance now.
Yeah.
In terms of upfront, when we talk about being engaged, let's have that conversation. What are you looking for? Mm-hmm. What do you expect it to look like?
Yeah.
Because at the very beginning, clarifying those expectations with the leader at the beginning is the most important.
When you say leader, and when you ask this question, what are you looking for and what is the expectation? Who are you asking this question to? Like, is it my experience? I would have everybody as a part of that and be like, you know, what is expected out of, let's be very frank with each other. Let's be very transparent. And let's talk about each of our roles and expectations so that we know what we are expecting out of each other. That's one part of the game. The second part is, what do you expect out of the product? What are we building? And why the heck are we building this thing? What's the value conversation? Are these the same questions that you're surfacing as well, or is there some different things that you've encountered?
So I think there's two stages to that.
Yeah.
So I believe that that's the right approach,
yeah.
but maybe not every leader or company is in the right space to do that all at once.
Okay.
Especially with organizations that are still new to this transparency thing.
Yeah.
It's almost sensitive. So in my world, that looks like sitting with the leader, probably it's going to be a VP probably,
yeah.
and sitting down with them and really just trying to understand, like, why did you bring me in here? What do you really need? What's at the core of what you're trying to get to,
yeah.
so that I can help you get there? But if I don't understand
truly
what you're trying to get to, then that's step one. The other part to that in that same conversation is really about, I want to make sure that they know when we talk about agile, what version of agile are we talking about? There's lots of images out there, and there's one, honestly, I pulled from Google. It's the best. And it talks through the 20% benefit that companies will get almost immediately versus the 80% benefit that you get when you really, like, that heart and soul into it. And that's what I lean in with, because I say, I can help you get to 20,
yeah.
but that's not what I'm here for. Like, you can help yourself get to 20. I want to focus us on moving to that other kind of,
the 80%.
Yeah. Now I'm saying it and I'm like, why is it not 100%? Yeah. But, I think for me, it's really about, you will not get all of the value unless you do this right.
But do you think organizations are ready to understand that 80%? We both know that requires a lot of change. And hey, change is not easy, my friend.
You know, a year ago, I probably would have said no.
Yeah.
That they're not ready. They're not prepared, rather, would be a better answer. 6 months ago, I probably wouldn't have been at odds with it, maybe on both sides. And right now, as of about a month ago, I'm in HR, and I absolutely think we're getting there and we are ready for it. We in HR right now are having a conversation about, we need to change. Everyone knows we need to change, and we're just figuring out what that looks like. So I think that's inspiring, being at a company that, and I can reflect on my year and say my opinion has changed, means that we're moving the needles in the right way.
That's impressive. It's awesome when a department recognizes that change is required, but have faced a challenge where they're ready to change, but are not sure where they're headed with this change.
I mean, the message, this is very relevant.
Yeah.
In my day-to-day right now, the message in HR is, there's a whole bunch of tools we can use. There's a whole bunch of thinking that we can start to push our boundaries in the conversations that we're having that will just get us to better outcomes.
Yeah.
And so for us, it's a matter of what do you have in your toolbox?
Yeah.
But if you don't have a toolbox and you don't know that you should have one, you know, let's start there.
Let's start building something.
Yeah. And I have a huge passion for team dynamics and culture. And to me, if I say to any team, any VP, any exec, like, hey, do you want to improve your team? Like, duh. Like, that's a yes. That's a yes, please. Yeah. Show me how.
Yeah.
And to me, that's where the change we're all driving toward is team improvement. But it's just a matter of how we break that down. But I think it's about changing the conversation from, you know, how do we go agile, and just talk about how do we improve? Because I think that when we talk about just the agile, that's got a bit of a connotation now.
Yeah.
And I think it's taking away from the value that it's bringing.
I mean, definitely, it's a buzzword these days. Why coaching is important for an organization? And what are the things that one should do to become a good coach?
Ooh, okay. This is going to open up another topic. So I'm just going to rip off the Band-Aid and throw a few things.
Yes.
I don't think I'm an exceptional coach would be the starting point there.
Okay.
And I think that to me is the first thing you're looking for, is somebody who is self-aware in a coach. You're looking for, I think about like what makes a really good coach. Mm-hmm. And there's so many models to look at. You look at the stances. I mean, you're a mentor, you're a facilitator.
Yeah.
I just see it as somebody who's open to knowing where their blind spots are and who's ready to improve. Because that's in order to help other people figure out their blind spots and help them navigate through them, which is the role of a coach in my mind. You have to start with a place of vulnerability. And that's what I find is the most important piece.
Yeah.
But I would love to hear a room of coaches answer that question.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's about being comfortable. I think I've spent a year and a half in this space. I'm comfortable saying I'm not an exceptional agile coach. I don't think you need to be. You just need to be good in your approach and comfortable with how you shape the teams you're working with.
All right. That being said, we have 2 minutes left. We have discussed a lot of good stuff. Let's jump back to where we started from.
So the importance of coaching at the right level was the topic. And going back to that, you know, how do we make sure that we're on the right track would be that question. And I think to me, it comes down to what are three steps that everyone should consider when you start a coaching engagement. I feel like that might be like narrowing down the topic a little bit, but in a good way, because that I find is where you either start on the right foot or you don't. It's a lot easier to start on the right foot than to backpedal.
And what do you mean by the right foot?
So I think first and foremost, the moment you have an ask, really getting to the root of where the ask is coming from and what the need is of that person.
Yeah.
You know, there's so, I feel like you could probably run a design sprint with the person and you'd figure out so much. You know, what problem are you trying to solve? Yeah. Let's talk about that. What are you looking to get out of it? What does it look like for you? I'm almost kind of really peeling the onion, but again, with the VP, like you don't want to be doing that with the wrong level because you're almost wasting your time. And then once you get there, I would say then bring the rest of the conversation with the team. So now that we're understanding what we're trying to get to, what that Northern Star looks like, let's fold in the team. There's a lot of practices from SAFE actually that kind of when you're lifting off and getting started that I love. It's, you know, all about aligning and bringing everybody in the room and ensuring you have, you know, everybody from the team level all the way up to what you're trying to achieve. And to me, that's like a big kickoff, and that would be my next step. So you've got your conversation with your leader, you've got a clear expectation of what they're trying to get out of this.
Yeah.
Now let's bring the whole group together, have that conversation so there's no questions about it, and really figure out as a group, what does it look like and how are we going to get there together?
Let me throw this hypothetical scenario where a product owner is leading an initiative that has a stakeholder and a sponsor who's backing it up. As a scrum master, as a coach, who do you connect with? All three of them or just the product owner?
All of them. I find if you have, I mean, I'm going to throw out a few examples, a VP of product, a VP of engineering, even just those two.
Yeah.
And then let's say your executive sponsor that isn't either of those people. Yeah. having everybody that needs to do work in what you're trying to achieve should be a part of that conversation.
Yep.
And the reason I say that is because, again, think about the change that will need to happen. So if I'm a VP of engineering, I mean, I have a whole slew of team of people that need to be doing the work.
Yeah.
And so unless I understand and truly believe in what we're trying to achieve from the executive sponsor's perspective and how this will operate, that's where you start to break... that's where you start to get into anti-patterns. I find it's then that's the I versus we, because I'm coming from it from a place of VP of engineering. That is my voice at the table instead of we all are bringing different areas of the business and expertise. How do we leverage the collective to really solve for a problem that's important to the organization?
So let's talk about another situation, and then we can jump to our next topic. Here's how it goes. The project has already started. As a Scrum Master, you connect with stakeholder, and they raise a concern about most of the things they wanted to do are delayed. What would you do in this situation?
Pull everybody back together. So, and I'll say why, and I've seen teams do this in the last few months, actually. Course correcting is fine.
Yeah.
Like that's what the message we're trying to get out there.
Yeah.
It is okay to change your mind or to pivot, not change your mind, rather. It's good. It's healthy to acknowledge that we're maybe not meeting the needs that we thought we set out to achieve.
Yeah.
Let's pull everybody together and talk about it
because
either our Northern Star changed or we don't understand where the Northern Star is anymore. And I think it's about that power of aligning at the beginning in a kickoff is just as relevant. The moment you see that start to stray, pull everybody back.
Is it a retrospective? Something like 5 whys? How do we find accountability and reason for the delay?
I'm a big believer in retrospectives. I think they can solve a lot of the challenges that we hit in organizations, in families, everything. However, if you don't have the trust you need to have a retrospective, that might not work so well. So I would caution running in and trying to have a session where you're going deep into a problem with an audience of that level if you don't have the trust you need. However, I've seen it done with a lot of tact. Like even when you're not sure if it's there to do a retrospective and making sure that that's handled with delicacy is very, very powerful for sure. And I don't know that I would go deep into the whys. I don't know. I find that when you do 5 whys, it's very personal.
Yeah.
So I prefer to kind of keep them a little bit of, you know, are we still on track with our core principles or our vision? Yeah. You know, yes, no. And and where do we fall?
Yeah.
And I kind of, one more thing that I'll add there is I've done a lot of, hey, what has our journey been over the last quarter, let's say, and you put that out. And then if you ask the audience as you're kind of going through what the steps were, if you ask them, where could we have pivoted? Just give me a sticky note, put it on this timeline.
Yeah.
And I find that just doing that and saying, hey, had we made a different decision 1 month in, we would be different in a different place today.
Yep.
And that's such an easy activity. I mean, and it scales easily. You know, you can put that on a year. You can put that on 3 months or 3 weeks. So that I find is powerful to let people really reflect on where you should change directions.
Should we have stakeholders as part of our sprint rituals? There have been times when the stakeholder is not aware what's being done in the sprint and the alignment is missing.
It sounds like your product owner is not doing their job, actually, as we kind of unpeel that a bit more. Yeah. So if a stakeholder's coming and they entirely think we've been headed in the wrong direction, then the direction that has been set for the team at the team level with the product owner is not on par. So I would urge, like, I mean, that to me sounds more like a misalignment between PO and stakeholder.
Yeah.
But I think, again, so I would probably ask, so what? You know, we're at sprint review. We've just spent 2 weeks and you don't like it. Okay. Cool. Yeah. What do you want us to do in the next 2 weeks that will make you happy? Like, and this is something that I think as practitioners, sometimes maybe we are too hard on ourselves on. Wasting a 2 week sprint sucks, but it's only 2 weeks. Like, that's nothing. Think about all the months and years that we've wasted on all these projects. Yes. It's insane.
Yes.
And so, you know, someone I work closely with now says this a lot, you know, we kill ourselves at work when we miss like a day. Like for us, a day delay kills us because it just seems crazy, but it's nothing in a large organization. A day is nothing. That's just someone didn't look at their email.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would kind of look at it as a bit of that. But I, yeah, for sure, check in on that product owner.
Sweet. All right. Let's move on to our next topic.
What do you have on your list?
Oh, you want me to pick one?
Yeah, because we did one of mine. I'd love to do one of the ones you have over there.
Okay. You know what? Let's pick this one.
Roadmap, their importance, and how to build one. In traditional project management, aside, we used to have Gantt charts. Now we deal with roadmaps. Here's how I think they're important. Helps the team to know where they're heading. Helps an organization to know the goals or upcoming releases. Keep things on track. All in all, what's coming in the future? Product owner to see what people or resources they need to get or to connect with. Lastly, and this is something this is more like a cultural thing. Helps you to plan your vacation, you know? What's your perspective on this?
What is a product roadmap? Let's start there.
Okay, let's talk about that. What's a product roadmap?
So this is interesting because I will say this looks different everywhere I find, actually.
Yeah.
And I was at Coach Camp in June, which is hosted in Cornwall. And I actually did a talk on product ownership. And I kind of pitched it as like product ownership. What do you do? Where do you start when you're coaching product owners? Yeah. And in that, one of the major things that we talked about a lot was product roadmaps.
Beautiful.
Because we said, okay, like, let's start there. How do you get someone to build a product roadmap? Yeah. And I threw it back to them as a room full of coaches because it was funny that I have seen multiple versions and I wasn't sure what a product roadmap really was. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's multiple sources of truth.
Yeah.
There are many tools for it.
Yeah.
So what does everyone's toolbox look like was what I was trying to get out of that. And we had people come and talk about story maps as a product roadmap and the value that could use depending on what you were using the roadmap for. We had people talk through probably more similar to a Gantt chart, which is kind of just blocks of time in whatever visual template makes sense. We had people say, why have a roadmap when your backlog should be your roadmap? I mean, all kinds. So I think it's just important, I would say, to have that conversation before running into having people use roadmaps would be what is the roadmap? What does it look like? What do we need it to look like based on our organization, our stakeholders? Like, that's the right conversation to start with there.
So some organizations have a block of release as their roadmap. Some have Epic displaying their sprint goals. If it is a practice and not just a mindset, share with me the ways to build one.
Great questions. Loving the conversation. This is great. I think to me, I would go back to what information do you need? Every organization is different. Every line of business within those organizations is different. And I think about, my world in HR right now, and we're very much focused on what problem are you trying to solve?
Yeah.
What outcomes are you driving toward? And what does that look like? So for us,
our
roadmap would probably be a bunch of questions. Like, it would probably just say, do we know where our customers are yet? Do we know how we're going to test this thing? That's very much because we know what our vision is. We know what our goals are. Yeah. And all we're trying to do is just head toward our goals. So if we had to build out a very explicit roadmap, I mean, it would just say learning and adapting and learning and adapting. So in my world right now, I mean, what's more important than a roadmap for us are OKRs. Objectives and key results. It's a mechanism lots of companies are getting to lately. We used it a lot at FreshBooks as well, and I thought that was a very useful technique. So that, but I think coming back to the question, I would just say, what information do you need to serve up to the audience that looks at that roadmap? Because having too much of a detailed roadmap, I find, is also very limiting and would be, to me, I would probably ask how much autonomy the teams have.
Let's pick an example. The team wants to know what's coming in the future and if they are on track. How can we communicate what's coming next?
I would still go back to OKRs on this one, actually. Yeah. And I say this because we had some of those shared resource instances, if you will, at FreshBooks. And we kind of do now, too, in some ways. And I think it's just about, if you lay out very clearly what are your, you know, objectives and key results for the year, the quarter, something that worked well at FreshBooks was breaking it down into a milestone.
Okay.
So you actually get a monthly view. So you have a quarter objective, and then the milestone is just like, what are the things we're going to do this month that will help us get there? And if you break it down to that level of granularity and you bring that, I guess, some level of audience together every month to look at that, you know what we will be planning for the quarter and then now what's on par for this month versus next month. And that helps a little bit there.
And the ownership is important then to make sure you keep it growing. I feel having a roadmap is helpful because it keeps everyone aligned on what's our goal. And everyone has an opportunity to bring us back on track in case we drift away. Sadness comes when my team does not have anything like that and they don't know where they're heading.
My product owner should be able to tell me where I'm going and why I'm going there. A strong product owner is a cheerleader, a motivator. Yeah. I am constantly reminded why we're doing what we're doing. Okay. Now, tactically, if we talk about refinement and planning, the product owner should be setting the stage every time someone walks in the room. Okay. I'm big on goals.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk into planning and say, product owner, what are the goals for the sprint? What do you want us to achieve?
Yeah.
I don't need a bunch of user stories just yet. What do you want us to achieve?
Yeah.
So that at the end of it, we can say, did we get it or not? Are we there? Are we not? And that's, you know, if I think about, I don't know, 2 week sprints, I've got a refinement and a planning probably, which means every single week I am being reminded what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. I don't see a scenario there where I, as a team member, start to say, well, how's this product doing in production? Because a good product owner is already telling me before I ask that question.
What should be done when a PO says that he or she is not sure where the product is headed?
I would sit down with the product owner as a coach or a scrum master and say, your inability to stay connected to the product is causing the team to be demotivated and start to lose the ability to connect to their work.
Faith. Yeah.
There's I think it's Google. I have so many models, but meaningful work.
Yeah.
Like, people need to understand why they're doing what they're doing. That's where you get the power of collaboration. That's where you get the power of the benefits of what we're trying to achieve. And laziness isn't an excuse. And I find a lot of times it's either they don't have the time to do it because maybe the organization doesn't understand the role of a product owner.
Yeah.
So again, that actually brings us back to that first topic we talked about. If they have the time, let's make sure they know how. Let's make sure we are sitting with them. Do you know that this is your responsibility? Like, do you know that you can't really...
Yeah.
For you to say you don't know where your product is at is like... I have no analogy that is beautiful enough or funny enough, but...
I know.
I mean, it just can't... It can't continue because it causes the team to question whether or not they should have faith in that role. And, you know, is everything that I'm working on the right thing? Well, I don't know anymore. And that question can't be rolling around in my head because I need that brain power for other meaningful conversations about that meaningful work. So I think I would root it back in that. And I think this goes to a larger conversation, which is at some point we need to be really honest with the roles and what they were intended to do. And I have a high bar for product owners and scrum masters. I'm the first one to say, like, you know, are all of the scrum masters and product owners that I've ever worked with perfect? No, but I'm not changing my standard. This role truly is crucial. And if we lower that bar, that role will get diluted. And now we've got organizations trying to think that they don't need a product owner to do, you know, refinement. I don't understand. Like, so I know that's a passionate topic for me.
Talking about understanding roles and responsibilities, how can we build something that talks about roles and responsibilities? There is one aspect of what the book says. And then there is another where organizations are tweaking to suit their needs.
I think when you get into roles and responsibilities, it really starts to sound like a racy.
Yeah.
And that the formality of it, I find, is what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
Do I think it's important for everyone on the team to understand what their role is and the value of that role? Absolutely. I just I come at it with really kind of creative ways to do that. Like okay. I actually pretty tactically, I'll just share. I usually bring the team into a room and I say, there's a column for PO, there's a column for Scrum Master, and there's a column for team probably.
Okay.
Now I'm going to ask everybody, I want you to write down what you expect out of yourself and your role. Like, what is your role?
Yeah.
And then I also want you to do that for the other roles.
Yeah.
And then we have a conversation about it. And what ends up happening more often than not is a bunch of stuff that maybe someone thought was the Scrum Master.
Yeah.
That's probably team. And you end up creating another box after. Like, it does. I usually don't do it at the beginning for that reason. It's everybody has this, like, we are jointly, and this is something that comes from one of the core principles we have in my team in HR, like, we are jointly accountable for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all need to recognize that we all have skin in the game, and this is the success because of every single one of us. Now, knowing that, there's a few things that fall under different people's plates. And so I find that the power is more in we are jointly accountable than it is your role is this.
I'm stealing this idea, by the way. I'm definitely going to do this on the floor.
Perfect.
This will be something that's going to happen the very moment I step into the office.
Great.
But this is really good. Like, I feel this is something I thought in my own way, and I need a different perspective, and having you on board is something really valuable for me as well. And I'm pretty sure people who are listening to this, they would connect with you on a lot of level of like, this, we never thought this way.
Well, and I'm going to insert a plug too, because I maybe didn't explain it right, but that's actually one of the topics was around coaching teams versus roles.
Okay.
And this is where I find we often, and I talk about this with some of the coaches, it's really easy to fall into a pattern where I overcompensate and I'm just coaching the product owner.
Yeah.
But having a product owner understand their role really well and a team that doesn't understand that role is not valuable.
Yes.
So it's definitely a balancing act to figure out, well, how much time do you take of everyone's time to have those conversations?
Yeah.
But guess what? Like, if we don't know what we're all doing, how on earth are we going to be able to be the best team ever? So this is the right time to spend.
Yeah.
So I try to do a lot of things with the whole team as much as possible, but I do recognize that some people grow and learn better one-on-one. So that's actually a hard thing to figure out.
I think I have been stuck with just like one phase of coaching in past years. Now that my team is evolving, I think I'm taking more like a broader perspective of things and being like, include everybody in it. Whether you're a stakeholder or a sponsor or anybody else, you're still part of the journey, you're still part of the team. And let's be open about it. And this is something I am definitely stealing from you now.
And I'll say too, that's a learning from my last year. I very much would overdo it on the one-on-one and just the role coaching.
Yeah.
But then I started to realize teams don't thrive when they have a really good product owner. Like, teams are not great because of a great Scrum Master.
Yeah.
Teams are great because of their collective.
Yes.
And that power of collective and collaboration truly is
massive.
That's where I flip-flop between, you know, am I agile or do I just love culture? Because I don't know, I get torn. But to me, it's all about just how people work together.
Beautiful. And that's a wrap. It was such a pleasure to have you here, Rena. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this
was
fun.
Let's bring some more topics.
Yeah, I love the topics at the beginning too. It's good for fresh thought.
Yes. Awesome.
Perfect.
We'll see you in the next session.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Rena.
Thanks for listening to Toronto Tech Talks. Don't forget to check out our website, torontotechtalks.ca. And for the latest scoop, follow us on Instagram at Toronto Tech Talks. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.